Hey, Lex Coach Mike here, LexCoachMike.com. Premium guys, love you to death. You are going to love, love, love this podcast. Got to know this coach, in 140, 150 hours podcast. By my standards, one of the most creative coaches I've ever talked to and a huge proponent of our site. Perhaps I'm introducing you to Ryan McAlevey at Florida Institute of Technology. Incidentally, an incredible academic school, D2. This coach is not afraid of challenges, man. He started a high school program, then went down there in 2010 at FIT. They played the first game in 2012. And in 2013, he was a Deep South Conference Coach of the Year. Not bad, huh? You're going to love the podcast. Just all kinds of creative things, including his own twists on drills that he got, in some cases, off our site, like the night drill and a drill we got from Petro. You're going to love it, and get your pencils ready and take notes, man. Thanks to our buddies at Crossover for helping to make all this possible. Special thanks to you. You guys are unbelievable. Without further ado, I think you're going to really, really, really love this podcast with Coach Ryan McAlevey, Florida Institute of Technology.
Hey, that's Coach Mike here. That's CoachMike.com. Man, I am really, really excited for our podcast today. Coach Ryan McAlevey from Florida Tech, not a long-standing program, but certainly one that's been on the rise. I've gotten to know this coach personally, and can't wait to have him share some of his ideas. Hey, Coach, thanks so much.
Hey, Mike, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Hey, give us 20 seconds on the background of the program. This is the sixth year?
Sure, this is year and
D2,
year six.
Yeah.
D2, it was one of the first teams to start in Florida. Rollins, Florida Southern, St. Leo, I think, was the first one. And it's a conference that's every year we get stronger and stronger and competitive, more competitive. So it's an engineering primarily school, but we do offer a lot of other programs, communications, business. And our students are pretty diverse. So.
Yeah, and hey, coaches, the academic reputation of the school is like really, really, really strong. So if you've got somebody that wants to get out of the north and get one of the top 10 engineering ranked degrees, this is a really, really good place to be. And coach, the other thing that's cool. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
We actually are to go along with that. Our graduation rate and our job placement rate are through the roof right now. So, we right now, every kid that finishes their eligibility or has finished eligibility is graduated, and every single one of them has gotten a job in their field of study. So we're really proud of that.
Well, and they're high-paying jobs, man. I mean,
absolutely.
Hey, you and I talked last week a little bit. One of the many, many cool things about you is you've actually got a healthy stint of a background as a high school lacrosse coach, and as the listeners know, lacrosse is a lot different than other sports. There's only a handful, out of our 140 or 150 hours or whatever it is, where the guys coached high school for more than a cup of coffee, thrilled. You're one of us. How cool is that?
Growing up, I come from a big lacrosse family, and my father is actually one of 17. He has 13 sisters and four boys in the family, and we have five All-American lacrosse players in our family. And growing up, it was always there. I played baseball when I was young. I was that was the black sheep of the family, and then didn't really start to play until freshman year. And, obviously fell in love with it. And then when I went on to college, I just fell so in love with it that I wanted to keep going and thought teaching would be the way to go. And, fortunately for me, I was able to coach at Dowling for 2 years and, move on to Suffolk Community College. And then in between that time, I worked for my uncle up in Connecticut and started a high school program up there, Notre Dame Catholic High School in Fairfield, Connecticut. And it was one of the best experiences I've ever had. So it worked hand in hand and was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking on the air. I think Purdy at Adelphi is one of the few longstanding high school coaches that moved in. And Tierney did a stint. Berkman did a stint. A lot of guys did a year or two. You know, I think Berkman did a little more than that. He was a soccer coach, too. But, yeah, man, nice to know one of us made it to the big time.
Well, I don't know if I'm big time. You know, I got lucky.
Hey, Coach, let's get right on it, man. Run us through what a understanding, of course, as you do more than most. You know, high school programs oftentimes, you know, once we get into the season, are playing two times a week, and the structure of Monday through Friday is a little bit different. And you still have weeks when you play multiple games in a week. But generally speaking, is there a general outline when you start to plug in your drills for your practice plans? And if so, what does a standard practice plan at FIT look like?
Well, we changed a lot throughout the years. I mean, when I first started the program here, it was me and we had a volunteer assistant. So, you know, along with 19 freshmen and a handful of transfers. So, you know, we've kind of evolved a lot since day one. And, you know, in the fall, I guess our philosophies are stick skills and conditioning. And that's kind of where we are right now. And, you know, my whole thing is if you can't catch and throw and if you can't run, you're not going to be successful at this game. So everything that we do right now in the fall is driven by, you know, stick skills and conditioning. In the spring, we'll change it up. Basically, it depends on where we're at as far as are we in a regular season, are we in preseason, you know, hopefully get to the postseason. And again, you're absolutely right about multiple games in a week. We don't have the luxury of, you know, having one game a week where we can spend the whole week preparing for one game. I mean, especially you'll see at the Florida schools, you know, we're at the mercy of people traveling down here to play, and it's actually starting to get few and far between. So we have to schedule multiple games in a week and in order to fill our schedule. So it could be, you know, game, you know, day off or film session, and then another game. So, you know, what we try to do is early in the year get all of our concepts in and what we're trying to, you know, accomplish for the year based on who we have on our team. And we don't really know exactly how the new guys are going to mesh with the old guys. So that's what the fall is kind of all about. And then we go from there. I mean, you know, if I were to take you from like a practice right now in the fall.
Let's go to spring, right?
You go to spring? All right.
Yeah.
When we start off, we'll go, we actually changed up our schedule. In the past, we were going 6 to 8:30 at night. Right now, we're going 5 to about 7:30 in the afternoon, which is so much nicer. We'll have the goalies and the face-off guys report early. And we'll do about 15, you know, maybe 20 minutes of goalie and face-off work. My defensive coordinator, who is phenomenal, is also a former goalie. So we're blessed that I don't have to really teach the goalies because, you know, I'm a former attackman. I don't know the first thing about, you know, stopping a ball. So he'll do all the work with the goalies, and then I'll do the face-off guys. And, again, I don't really know too much about face-off work. I've got a lot of help from the outside. And we'll just drill them and, you know, 15, 20 minutes of that. And then while we're working with them, the rest of the team starts to come in. They'll do, you know, shooting, their pre-practice work. Some of them, you know, some of the older kids like to stretch a little bit longer, so they'll start their stretching routine. And then, you know, pretty much 20 minutes after we take the field, the team, you know, gets in and they start their dynamic warm-ups. And then after that, it's about, you know, once we are getting ready to start practice, we've got about 10 minutes of ball drill that we go in. And that changes on a daily basis.
Yeah, what's a ball drill, Coach?
Well, ball drills can be anything from partner passing, you know, star drills. We call, you know, crazy eights, which is a drill that we have. It's a full field passing drill. One thing that we used this year that I really liked is it's a diamond passing drill. And We'll break up offense and defense. The defense will do their breakouts, and I'll take the offensive guys, and we set up the cones in a diamond. But what we'll do is, for every point of the diamond, we'll have two cones. So instead of just one point, we'll have two, and each cone is spaced about 5 yards apart. All of the offensive guys are in the center, and we'll have two balls going out. And what they have to do is they have to run to the outside cone and then time it to cut to the opposite cone when the ball is ready to come. So we work on our ball drills and our timing, because when we put them in our offense, you know, our offense is driven on proper timing and cuts and all that stuff. So
it's kind of like the old Syracuse star drill almost, huh?
Yes, it is. And you know, the one thing that we've really been stressing is making sure all the passes are to the outside ear,
right,
and on a rope. You know, I watch these lollipop passes and it just drives me crazy. So, and then we can.
Yeah, I'm always screening flat hard passes. I need to find a better way to say that.
Right.
I bet you I screen flat hard passes 1,000 times in every practice.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you'll hear me. You know, outside ear and on a rope. Those are my biggest things that I'm always screaming. So, and then you can always expand, you know, the diamond how you see fit based on how the guys are responding to the drill.
And what do we have the D doing while these guys are doing the?
The defense goes through their breakout scenario.
Okay.
So Coach Penn will have them. They'll line up, and we'll have the goalie in the cage. We'll have three defenders lined up, pretty much simulating. And actually, what they'll do is, they'll have a skeleton offense. So this is all defenders. So we'll have a group of guys that are on offense or simulating an offense, and then we'll have the defenders D them up. And they'll move the ball around. Coach will blow the whistle. We'll get a fake shot on cage, and then the defense will go through their patterns, and they'll basically clear the ball out. And there's a lot more reps than it really sounds. You know.
So you're doing that with it's like a 3-on-3, right?
No, it's a full 6-on-6. So they'll
and
have.
And are the D middies in that drill, or are the poles also playing like middie positions? Okay.
Yes, the defensive middies are in, and then we'll just keep rotating. We'll keep rotating every rep, and if it gets to be too slow, we can work on doing sides, where we'll have half the group break out one side, the other half break out the other, so we get a lot of touches.
Okay. All right, so we're 10 minutes in now. Where do we go, Coach?
The next 20 minutes, we go into our uneven series. And this is also something that we use a lot of touches with, and this is more realistic live situations. I'm a big fan of J.B. Clark and what they do up in Limestone, so I've stolen a couple of drills from him. I think they call it the flying rats, that triangle drill that they do. Where they have the 3-on-2s. So basically you set up a triangle in front of the cage, and you have three offensive lines. The whistle blows, the ball gets thrown in, and you have the two defenders come in, and it's a 3-on-2 situation. That's one of
and those triangles are crunched, right, Coach?
Yes, yeah. They're probably about 5 to 7 yards apart. You know, that's not a very big triangle. And we just work on, you know, keeping our feet moving, finding passing lanes, you know, in tight passes, and then the defense obviously is communication, you know, rotating through.
Yeah, Ryan, do you rotate the way you, or do you change up the way you have the triangle set, or do you set it up two on top, one?
We do one up top, and then we have the two on the bottom.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We haven't. We also do the toggle drill. That Chris Bates does or did at Princeton. That's something. I'll tell you one thing, that I really like that drill too. And again, you know, it's more for the touches. We do it more for, you know, touches in tight and, you know, converting shots in tight. But, you know, we do.
Yeah, I want to tell the listeners, man, Coach Ryan is a long time premium guy on laxcoachmike.com. I'm so thrilled when I get a chance to talk to guys that are using the drills, and If you, in the search box, just search on Bates, that was a kind of two small rectangles. Again, we use the term crunched. I mean, I'm not sure. JB has a different term he calls it. But when you're just trying to work the drill in a confined area.
Yeah.
But we run it three lines, you know, from the middle of the goalie over, and then toggle right, left. So, you know, on one side, almost all the touches are left hand. On one side for the O guys, almost all the touches are right hand. Then you rotate those lines if you want. But it goes rapid fast, and it is a lot of touches.
Yeah, I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. So, you know.
No, man. I said,
I'm
thrilled.
And, you know, yeah. And then, you know what the best part about it is, you know, everybody wants to share their drills, and, you know, we'll just take a drill and modify it to fit our team, and it's awesome. You know, it's definitely something. And something that we're trying to do this year is instead of hold our space, we're trying a little bit. I'm tweaking a philosophy of mine. You know, when you're in a man down situation defensively, you guys are, you know, you're taught to basically stall the offense so that help can come in. And, you know, something that we're looking to do this year is to get that defense to make, you know, make it or force them into a decision quickly. So what we'll do is let's say that toggle drill, you know, we'll put the ball up top. They have to pass it down the side, and we'll have one of those guys, instead of cut to space, set a screen. Because now you get the guy with the ball, he carries, forces one of those defenders to play him, and now that other defender has to split too. And so basically, instead of waiting for that defender to make a choice, we force him into a choice by going to set a screen. And this is something that we've just started to do, and I'm really liking where it's going.
It's blasphemy. It's blasphemy,
yeah.
Coach.
Yeah. Well, it's
in a transition drill, we want to coach spacing, not picks. It's blasphemy.
Oh, I know. And then, you know, I'm a big.
That's funny. I'll be interested to talk to you a little while down the road and see how that works out.
Yeah, we're gonna try it. I mean, we'll see how it goes. And, you know, I want to be unpredictable. You know, I don't want to just stand there and you know, because you know sometimes if you get the wrong kids out there and you tell them, you know, just stand there and spread out, they just literally stand there and they don't ever move. You know, so if we set a screen on the inside, you know, from an outside, you know, from outside in, you set a screen, the kid rolls off, and now you have to force that defenseman, force him into a decision. Do I stay inside and cover the inside guy, or do I have to, you know, come out and cover the ball? So, and all that, you know, after the guy who originally started with the ball, after he passes, you know, he now cuts opposite where, you know, where that original, you know, cutter was. And, you know, you get your guys moving that way, and now the defense really is like, where do I go? You know? So we're trying
it
out.
Do you have I find that really interesting. Do you have parameters for that decision? I mean, let me talk in very broad terms for a second.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, if we're coming down on a what I don't even call a transition moment, but maybe a a pure fast break, are we still going to exercise that kind of philosophy?
Well, it all depends on if they're cheating. You know, in a fast break, we don't use it typically in fast break situations. This is more for like 6-on-6 stuff. So what we found in the past was, you know, when you hit the alley, the middie hits the alley and they slide from the crease. And let's say we ran what I call a 10 set, which is the two attackmen behind, one in the crease, and kind of the umbrella set up top.
Right.
So if you had a middie dodging down the alley, and the crease guy primarily was your, you know, your first slide, well, the backside defender is always going into the crease to support, right?
Right.
Well, 9 out of 10 times, we always found that that midfielder was always just staying there watching the play. Well, now you're making a situation where you're trying to draw the slide and make it, you know, but it's really working. It's a 6-on-5 in the favor of the defense because that offensive guy is just standing
right
around doing nothing.
I'm with you.
So what we're teaching now is instead of standing there, move your feet, go in and pick your own man who is now in the crease, and now you have the crease guy curling off the back side, because now that middie who had the ball is now swinging it through X, and now it's coming out the backside, and now you force that crease defender to make a choice. Do I go play the cutter who just curled off the crease, or do I stay inside with this, you know, with this pick can? And, you know, we're finding that that curl is open because now you're running away from the play, and, you know, you're forcing that defender into a really tough spot.
Well, and even if the backside pipe defender comes,
think of
it maybe in terms of what used to be a coma guy almost,
right.
He's trailing that guy from the back.
Correct.
You know what that reminds me of, Rob? It reminds me of the Berkman C-cut shooting drills.
Uh-huh.
Where a guy would drive the alley, the wing attackman would go past the back, cut through the front of the crease, go past the backside, and then pop.
Yep. Pop back.
And you can run that as a two-man game, you know, where the guys, if you're going to use the 3D terminology, money passes to him with his right hand.
Yep.
Maybe better with the younger teams, you know, rather than have that guy roll. Or you'll have the guy roll back and hit the mirror or the fill, and he immediately bangs it to the what was the wing attackman, but is now kind of the pop guy.
Right.
You know what? I've had trouble getting guys to do that in games, man. I think when, you know, every once in a while I have a team that gets it, and that look really freaks out a team, man. I mean, defensively, next thing you know, everybody is sagged in, you know, and you can get some nice looks from just outside of time and space, too.
Yep, absolutely. You got the
You're an innovator, man. Like That's interesting.
Well, we're trying, you know, trying to be different, you know.
Yeah, I guess my my philosophical coaching question is, you know, educating the players on when you want to run that and when you don't.
Yes, and I think if it's the right personnel, and it comes with educating, or it comes with having each individual player know who they are and know their teammates. You know, if that ball, let's say, if you were dodging down the left alley, and you swung it through the bottom right attackman through to the left side, you know, if you had an offensive player on the crease that was a lefty, you wouldn't necessarily have to, you know what I mean? You wouldn't try to, you know, I mean, you could, especially at our level, because we preach that, you know, it doesn't matter what hand you are, you have to be good at both. But you might want to, if that guy on the crease is a natural lefty, you might have that curl as the decoy guy and kind of set a bad pick so that defender thinks, okay, I can go get him, and now you're going to be open in the inside.
Well, and it's really funny you said that because – or it's interesting that you said that. If I'm going to try and run that kind of C-cut look in a game, we actually switch our right-hand and left-hand attackmans first.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So that if, let's say the guy's coming from on top and he's driving the right alley from on top, when that attackman clears through the crease and ultimately pops, or you can have the middy set a high pick for him and pop him off the pick, he's catching it with his right hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and unlike the, man, you're doing a great job on recruiting down there. Unlike the, you know, the recruits at FIT, you know, on a high school team, the guy might be able to go offhand, or maybe get a guy who can go both ways. But at the very least, you want that guy popping with his stick extended in his right hand to get that look. And, you know, when it happens in a game, the goalie doesn't have a chance, man, because he really doesn't have a chance to adjust from the passer to the shooter. And there's a lot of activity in front of him.
Yes. Well, and here's the thing. It all goes back to your core philosophies. You know, our core philosophies are stick skills and conditioning. So if you're drilling, all you have to do is get a kid, you know, to catch the ball within 7 yards coming off that curl, and, you know, you should be able to put it in a spot off goalie hip, you know, where you're going to be a threat. All you got to do is get the defense to think that you're a threat, and they're going to panic, and they're going to try to jump the ball. And if you do that, then you're going to be successful.
But you're right. When I, on the rare occasions that I have a team that can run it, the crease guy is so focused on the potential of a slide.
Yes.
That a lot of times he can be standing right there, but his hands and his stick are at his hip.
Right, and they're never looking at that backside guy coming in to set a pick. You know,
yeah,
they're focused on that dodger.
Well, and for the coaches out there, I'll tell you what's worked for me, Coach, is insisting that the attackman run by the pipe before he comes back up, in your words, curls.
Oh, yes.
because, you know, and it actually is ironic, you know, because it works a lot better against better teams. If his defender comes with him as he clears out, generally his defender will turn and look to support once the guy runs past the backside pipe.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because he's thinking, if the crease guy goes, I got to fill the crease.
Absolutely.
And so when you run by the pipe, a lot of times the defender will let you go, in a manner of speaking, you know, to where you're a lot clearer to pop up. Sweet, man. So, Coach, that's kind of a crunch drill after the first 10 minutes or the stuff in tight.
Yeah.
Do you open it up there in your transition series, your uneven series?
Yes, so we'll do the 10 minutes of ball drills, 20 minutes of unevens, and then for the rest of the practice, you know, we'll talk about, you know, our specific needs to become better as a team. So, you know, specific concepts. So we film all of our practices, and fortunately, you know, we have work study that we're able to, and we'll look and say, well, you know, we're not very good at this, or we need to work at this. And one thing that we've been really trying to get better as, and we're not traditionally known as a transition team, but we're trying to get better at transition this year. So, you know, usually after this unevens, we'll try to get up and down and do some transition stuff.
Hey, Coach, let's stay in the uneven for a second. You were running that as a crunch.
Yep.
Then do you open it up into and being very familiar with the you know, with the website, I'm just kind of curious about the philosophy here. You know, we've had coaches that will run it tight and then open it up, then run it tight, then open it up. We've had coaches that will go half field, full field, as you know, as a general manner of trying to change it up. You know, what other kind of things are you doing in that 20-minute uneven, or what I would call a transition section of the practice?
We don't usually do any unevens full field just yet, or we haven't.
In that segment,
In that segment, yeah. We'll save that for, you know, for later on and incorporate that into, like, transition. And we've done a lot of face-off to – we call face-off to fast breaks, where we'll do face-off,
right,
get a lot of our face-off guys, and then – do situations like that, and we actually have.
But I mean, are you? And you know, from listening to the website, you know, when we started this project, it seemed like guys were pretty steadfast in their what's the right word? Progression. 3v2, 4v3, 5v6. You know, I think, as you well know, over the last 2 years, you know, that philosophy for probably 60% of the coaches that we've talked to has gone out the window. You know, where it used to be, even in transition, it would be a build-up so that the players have to react to different scenarios at different times. You know, now it might be a 3v2, a 6v5, a 4v3. Are you actually building or doing
4v3
and 6v5 in the uneven section?
We'll throw it all in, and we don't want to... we don't follow a specific pattern. We'll just throw it, whatever we feel like, you know, mix it up at that point, we'll do it. We don't have a certain flow that we follow. So, you know, we might do the triangle scoring and then jump to, you know, a toggle drill. And you know, if that's kind of slow, then we'll, the biggest, you know, the favorite drill of the team is the West Jenny drill. So, you know, we'll bring the cages in and do something along those lines. But nothing really, as far as like we don't do unevens as far as like a 6-on-5, like half field stuff, just yet, you know.
Okay.
When we go into transition stuff, we'll do, it's a half field, but it starts at the opposite cage.
Yeah, so the uneven section is really tight spaces.
Tight space, yes.
Yeah, I mean, even the West Jenny drill, you know, depending on the different variations and how you run it, you know, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Coach, I didn't ask you, what's the timing on your drills? Are you a 7-minute guy, a 10-minute guy?
Well, you know, I'm a 10-minute to 12-minute type of guy, and then I'll figure it, you know, as the feel of the drill, you know, it'll all depend on the mood of the team and the coaches, you know, but 10 minutes is kind of like our base time.
Okay.
And then sometimes, you know, what we do is if the guys are having a lot of fun in a drill, we'll actually cut it short. You know, and I know that sounds funny, but what we'll do is we want to keep them hungry for the next day. So, you know, and try to rep it through. And if they have a drill that they really like, you'll see that, you know, they're moving through it really quick and everybody wants to get in. So the level of intensity is actually pretty cool. And what we'll do is I'll shrink it down a little bit so that, you know, they'll come back for more next time.
Interesting.
You know. And then if it, you know, we might have one day where I'm doing it for 12 to 15, you know, 15 minutes.
Really? I wouldn't have never thought that about you.
Yeah. yeah. I get, sometimes I have to, you know, if I get into a drill so, you know, and I'm so intense in the drill, you know, my assistants are like, you want to move on?
yeah. Yeah, as you know, man, I'm the opposite. I, you know, one of the biggest things the listeners, and you've heard me say too, I struggle with is, you know, sometimes I run so much transition for short durations that I've moved away from the fundamentals that take longer time just because I personally don't want to practice that way.
Right.
And I think in the last couple of years, I've done a really good job of coming back. When our players come back, they're going, man, you've changed. I'm going, well, you know, I mean, yeah, sometimes you got to take the time to teach and coach, you know.
Absolutely.
And I had always just been a teach and coach by touches. You know, there's there's more to it than that.
Yeah, we do a lot of classroom stuff, so, you know, our guys know. And usually before a drill, you know, before we start a drill, I'll bring everybody in and we'll just remind them exactly what we're, you know, the goal of the drill is, what we're trying to accomplish, and so that it's fresh in their heads. Instead of, you know, in the spring, when we're kind of, you know, game to game, we'll just kind of keep it short and go quickly. But in the beginning of the spring, January, I'll tend to make sure that everybody understands what we're trying to accomplish, bring everybody in. This is the goal of the drill. This is what we're trying to do. Let's go out and execute.
All right, man. So now we've come out of the uneven section, and you said the rest of the practice is kind of what you need to work on, but is there still a skeleton in terms of half field or smaller groups, or might you throw a 10v10 right in at that point?
Well, and again, it'll also depend on, so the first 30 minutes of practice is pretty much going to stay the same in every practice plan. We might go right into a 10-on-10 and just scrimmage for, you know, 10 minutes just to get these guys going. If they're starting off a little slow, or, you know, some guys are having a test, you know, a big midterm or something, and something that kind of changed their mindset and, you know, bring back the fun. So we might do a 6-on-6 segment. We might do, you know, just a scrimmage segment, or we might just do a transition drill. You know, but 9 out of 10 times, we're going to go into transition segments.
Keep going, man. I'm writing.
Our favorite drill that we do is transition is called the Blue Jay drill, and this is something that the guys really like. I really like. I stole it from Petromala. Last season, we actually were fortunate enough to play at Hopkins, The Hopkins team actually practiced right up until game time, so we got to actually watch them practice, and it was awesome, you know, to see that. And I stole one of his drills, and basically what we do is we set up with an attacking D on one cage, and then what we do is on the other cage, either my assistant or we'll get a goalie in there, and we'll have defensive middies and offensive middies set up in an offense. And then my assistant coach will say, all right, we're going to do a fast break right here. The goalie will throw it out. The defensive midi catches it, and we have a trailer. And then after maybe 3 or 4 seconds, the other two, or basically the other four offensive and defensive middies, are chasers. So
when you say AAD on one cage, you're talking three attack and three defensemen.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And then we'll control the situation that we're looking at. You know, maybe one day we want to work on, you know, a lot of fast breaks. So we'll just outlet it to one defensive middie, give him a head start, and then we'll send everybody else in the hole afterwards. And they go full field, you know, transitioning down. The attack have to recognize the situation, call the plays, set up. The defense is going through their calls, and then we go from there.
And you run that just one way down the field, right?
We do it one way, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and we do a ton of reps too. So as soon as the play is dead, you know, the next group is already coming down. And the attack and the D have to read the situation. Is it going to be a slow break? Is it going to be a fast break? The attackmen have to identify, you know, what situation it is. Are they, you know, is that offensive midi matching feet to the guy with the ball? You know, what are we in here? And then we'll just play it out. And then also what we'll do is, you know, if our guys don't have anything, if we don't create anything off the fast break or the slow break, then we'll go into our substitution and we'll substitute the appropriate people on the field and we'll play 6-on-6. So it actually, we have a new grad assistant this year. So we're actually working on training him to run the box. So it's been helping him, you know, a lot to get those proper people on the field. And then we'll play. And we'll play to a shot or, you know, play to two shots, however we see fit.
Yeah,
and sometimes, well, the majority of the time, whenever we go 6-on-6, the play doesn't just die with the ball, you know, going in the net, or actually better yet, when the ball, the goalie makes a save or the ball goes out of bounds, we play everything to a clear, and we, you know, we're riding and clearing. That's how we get a lot of our riding and clearing work in.
Well, and I know, you know, one of the huge, huge challenges for high school coaches is, well, number one, having a dedicated guy to run the box. You know, oftentimes the head coach finds himself running the box and then guys,
right,
you know, score and you have no idea what happened.
Yeah.
You know, and I turn around to the team and say, who scored? You know.
Yeah.
But running, you know, to run the box effectively takes practice. And
it's
practicing the box is laborious, boring, and sucks.
Yep.
You know?
Yes.
So finding
yep.
drills where you can integrate that in
mm-hmm.
is huge. And then the other challenge, I might be curious just to get your opinion, man. I mean, the other
sure.
challenge for high school coaches that we get all the time in the emails and stuff back is, how do I practice run the box when I got a 22 or 24 or 26-man roster? You know,
right.
I mean, I may have six freshmen out there practicing, too, that this is the second day they played lacrosse, you know. But
well, this is the
it's
perfect
a challenge
drill.
Working on the box
yeah.
when you don't have a big roster.
Oh, it's hard, absolutely, and you know this is the perfect drill because all you need is a full attack and full defense. You've got your offensive middies, your defensive middies, and you can just as you transition from the defensive side to the offensive side, you get your attackmen to take control. Your quarterback's out there; they call the situation, and then if it's not developing or if they missed opportunities, and now is the perfect time to get your offensive guys on and sub them off. So we get our substitution call, and then we'll just go through, you know, our substitution. So if you have, you know, and for a smaller roster, you know, if you have one attack and one defense out there and you have a couple of middies, you know, you can definitely work on practicing that substitution. You know, what we do sometimes is, because I want to practice it to almost a T, I put one of my hurt defensemen on the other side of the field. And what we'll do is, as they transition down, I'll have my box coach call that defender off. We get an offensive midi to line up on the other side of the 50. And then if the play doesn't develop into anything, we'll get our substitution call, and then we'll start to go through our whole substitution right there.
So even though it's kind of a breakout drill, if you will,
yes.
You're actually putting the midi on for the pole as part of the breakout,
yeah.
as if you were trying to emulate a more static clear.
Yes. We.
Wow.
I tell our guys that we're going to prepare for everything, and there might be a situation where we don't even make it to that substitution because we'll blow the whistle dead. But I want them to get those reps. You know, our box guy has to get those reps to get him out and get, you know, the proper people on the field just in case we do this, or I do decide to push the play through. So we've got to be ready for everything. And it's just a lot of reps, and we just work it.
So, Ryan, at the side of the field that this drill initiates on, you've got three O middies and your D middies and an LSM out there?
Yes, yes.
And it's generally going to one guy, and then everybody else is just kind of trailing back like they would in a game, you know, at different stages, and you get down and play.
Correct. And we'll say, you know, maybe one rep we want to do a fast break. Maybe, you know, the second rep, you know, we just roll the ball out to the side, you know, and we have the defensive middie or the long stick picks it up, and then the other guys are breaking into the hole, and they're all pushing. They're pushing it, and they're listening to what the, you know, to the attackmen are calling to identify the situation. And regardless, if we don't have anything, now we have to get it in the box, you know, get it through the attack, get it behind. And then as that is happening on the on the side where they're just clear from, our box coach is pulling a defender off who was just a hurt guy that's just standing there. Pull them off, get an offensive guy in, and get ready to go through our substitution.
So, I mean, there's a time when, even though it is, you know, described originally as a breakout transition drill, there are times when you set it up so that it might even be everybody down into a 66 without a break.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Huh.
And we do drag it out. I don't want to say drag it out because that doesn't sound good, but we do play it out to where it is a 6-on-6, and, you know, everything, we play to a 6-on-6, and then depending on the situation, we'll clear it back to the midfield line, and everybody, you know, those defensive middies who now become, you know, transition middies, will clear it to the 50, or a pole will bring it down, and we clear everything, and we ride everything on the backside there.
Love it. Hey, I'm going to digress for a second, if I'm allowed.
Sure.
I mean, I'm old. Old people get special compensation, you know. have you ever tried that retriever drill that's on my site from Hopkins?
No.
Where only two guys can bring it back over?
No.
It's too long for me to explain here.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, go to the search box and go to, I think it was the first or second interview with Petro. It's called the Retriever Drill.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, it's got some similarities to this, but.
Well, I took it from, you know what, that might have been the drill that he was doing at that time. Because I saw him do it, and then we just kind of modified it to what our team needed. So that might have been a variation of the retriever drill. Because I stole.
What's your favorite drill you got off the website?
Well, the drill that we really like is the one that Toomey got from Army. The I don't remember what he called it.
The night drill.
It was the night drill. Yep. We actually modified it a bit because.
You're kidding.
Instead of using one box, we use two boxes.
Right.
And
go both ways.
We go one side. And this is something that we use to get more touches in. So basically what we'll do is we'll have two boxes set up, you know, one on either side of the field. So basically on one side of the numbers and the other side of the numbers, everything's on the same side. So everything's the half field. Everything's half field. And we went from, instead of putting one attackman and one defender down there, we go with a full attack and full defense, you know. And then what we'll do is we'll have the 3-on-2 in the box, but we'll have both boxes passing the ball around at the same time. And we'll go over to a box, and we're going to say, you know, I'll give them a number. I'll say 2. And so that means two offensive guys are going, you know, whoever gets the ball, and then one other guy, and then one defender. And they create the uneven situation going down the field. And then while that's happening, we have that other box that is working the 3-on-2, keeping the ball on the perimeter, you know, working on their stick skills. As soon as the one box vacates to go down to push transition, five other guys come in and they start moving the ball around.
Right.
Three offensive guys on the perimeter and two on the inside. So there's another drill that we get a lot of touches with. And the coaches pretty much dictate the type of scenario that they want to see. So. But that's what I really like as well.
Yeah, it's not always a 6v5 coming down. It could be anything.
Correct. Correct. It could be a 5-on-4.
Right.
It could be, you know, we might say one, and then, you know, when the whistle blows, the guy with the ball, he just goes. And then you got a 5-on, you know, a 4-on-3. You know, it could be a 5-on-4. You know, it could be everybody. We can just release everybody down there, and we can even send, you know, that 6 midi in as a trailer, you know, depending on situations that we want to get better at.
Oh, man, I like that idea. Because it's for the guys that aren't on attack or defense, it's double the touches.
Yes, absolutely. And then what you can do, too, is whatever attackmen and defenders you don't have in, you know, we usually have them up at the boxes also.
Right, they've got to be in the box.
You know, there's a lot of touches that you're going through, and, you know, we'll have all the attacksmen and the defenders up there as well.
Yeah, I usually, on some days, will just divide the team evenly, you know, whatever it is, black and white or red and white,
right,
or whatever. And everybody plays that drill in every position with one attackman and one defenseman back, you know, in the original configuration of the night drill.
Yep.
And then, you know, I see a lot of colleges, especially the D3 guys, you know. When did we get to the point where D3 schools have 65-man rosters? When did that happen? Like sleeping? You know, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's just so many kids that are playing lacrosse now, you know.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, a couple years ago when I was coaching at Auburn, we were playing Liberty and went up and watched the Lynchburg was playing Stevenson at Lynchburg at the time.
Yep.
You know, so great game. I mean, you know, great coaches, great teams. Both were nationally ranked. I mean, but, yeah, they were running the night drill with two of the boxes on opposite sides of the midfield line and then an attackman and a defense at each end. So when you went down, let's say, hypothetically to your right, you came back and got in the box 3v2 like you were going down to the left.
Uh-huh. That's awesome.
And it was like a basically a full field rotation.
Right, right.
You know what
we've
I mean?
We've tried that. We've done that before where we have the attack and D on both ends and then have, you know, two boxes going, you know, one each side. I just like to watch everybody, so I was keeping it up, keeping that one side. You know?
Well, and if I tell you what, if you decide to do something like that or even do this, you got to really pay attention.
Absolutely, you do.
You know, because it's a fine line. I mean, as soon as those guys break, we have, you know, I'm screaming, next group, next group, next group, get the ball in the air, get the ball in the air, flat, hard passes. And, you know, and again, you can do that with every pass has to be a rollback. You got to run to a cone, and the other guy's got to adjust so that you always have somebody adjacent.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a lot of things, little things you can do with it, you know. Make it so that it's only throwbacks across your body one time, you know, or it's got to be a rollback or whatever. But, yeah, you got to be watching. You know, sometimes I get so caught up in watching the box that the play's already done at the other end of the field.
Right.
You know?
I'm guilty of that, too.
You know,
because you're trying to make sure that they're technically sound and get all their fundamentals right. And next thing you know, that you release the group and, you know, next thing you know, the play's over.
So, Coach, this, for lack of a better description, this transition segment, you said about 20 minutes on that?
We'll do, you know, 20, 30 minutes, depending on how the day is going. And then after that, we'll get into more settled stuff. We started.
So in rough terms, we're, where are we? Digging through all these notes. We're like an hour and 20 minutes in, or an hour and 30 minutes in now?
Yep.
Maybe not an hour and 30, maybe more like an hour and 20.
Yep. And then for the rest of the practice, we'll do 6-on-6 stuff.
Really?
Yep. Yeah, we
what
do.
What kind of variations
do
you use? I know you well enough to know you're mixing it up. What kind of variations are you using on the 6v6 stuff?
Well, we do this new thing that we started last fall. Last spring.
There is no new thing.
All right, for us it was.
I'm kidding.
But you know what I wanted to do was I wanted to work on skeleton stuff. And talking with my Mark Penn, who is my defensive coordinator, I was thinking, you know, like, why don't we get the defensemen and nubs and just work on their positioning and this and that. And then we kind of evolved it to what we call our pressure passing. And we called it packed in passing and then pressure passing. And what it was is basically...
Say that again, Ryan.
It's our pressure passing and packed in passing. And basically what it is like a glorified skeleton drill almost, where or a shadow. So basically it's 6-on-6, and the offensive guys have to run through their offense, but they're not allowed to go to the cage. And, you know, they're setting up their dodges, they're, you know, moving the ball like we're attacking a defense, and they have to make sure, you know, they get into their spots. And then what we'll do is we'll let that go for, you know, 30 seconds, and then they cannot dodge until the whistle blows. And then once the whistle blows, you're live. And then they go into the 6-on-6 situation. And what we do is we tell the defense, you know, we'll say, all right, we're doing our pressure, you know, our pressure series. So we'll have our defenders come press all over the place. And the offensive guys are not allowed to go to the cage. So they have to move themselves in a position to handle the pressure, but know that they're not going to the cage. So if we got guys that are carrying and pressing all the way out to the wing, the adjacent guy has to time it up so that he's not, you know, trapping himself in a corner. And then we do the opposite. We work on our packed in defense to where, you know, everybody kind of stays in tight, and, you know, that we have a little bit of trouble with, because, you know, our guys are so athletic that they just want to run against guys, you know. So, and we'll just run our offense, you know, run the motion through, you know, the defense. And again, same thing. They're not allowed to go to the cage to score until the whistle blows. And we'll
Podcast where Chamati was doing something like that.
Oh, it's awesome.
I can't remember the details. I had a hard time grasping it. Well, I had a hard time grasping his offensive, the sequence of his. And, you know, I'm getting to the point where I hate the word motion. You know, I mean, it just means so many different things to so many different people. But allow me a grace there, you know, till you know, they would run through their motion. Hey, let me ask you another question.
Sure.
I've become very anti-nub. And I got, believe it or not, you know, out of the mouths of babes, years and years ago, like 6 or 7 years ago when we were starting out, I can't remember if it was the first or the second interview with Tony Seaman, you know, when he was at Townsend. And I got to know him pretty good because we would go up there and play the Baltimore Crafts and all that, you know.
Sure.
And he would have a tour of his campus. I mean, he was so gracious. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was going to play it against sports and buying, you know, even sticks that had ripped out heads or stuff like that,
right.
You know?
Right.
And putting his guys in, he had six, like 20 inch sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was, in addition to the footwork, the benefit, the balance, the good defensive posture, all the things you get from working with the nubs, and I clearly recognize all that and acknowledge it, they could also really focus on stick on the high side.
Yes.
You know, and where the head of the stick was.
Mm-hmm.
And back in those days, you know, there was a heavy controversy. Everybody pretty much agreed. I don't hear that much about it anymore. I wonder what you think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, back in those days, let's say a guy's up top and he starts to drive, you know, mm-hmm. and assuming that we're not playing U15 and we want to make him go to his left or make him go to his right, you know, or maybe it's a Canadian guy that you just absolutely want to force him to go to his left, you know.
Right.
Which I think is coming back a little bit, actually, much to my chagrin. But because it's hard, you know, when you're coaching U15 or U17 or U19 or coaching a high school team, you know, like I am now at Whitfield, the Christian school, you know, these guys, you're telling them they always got to catch on the outside shoulder, but yet they see the Canadians catch the ball right-handed all the time, or left-handed, as the case may be.
Right.
But regardless, my point is so that guy would drive from up top, and he's being covered by a guy with a short stick with a head on it, a nub with a head, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, you could easily start a bar fight in the old days with defensive coaches saying whether or not you wanted that player to switch hands or cross over.
Right. Oh, we don't have him switch over. No,
you know.
Keep him in their strong hand.
Is that what you do?
Yep, we just keep it in their strong hand, and we don't have them switch over. And especially if they're dodging down the alley, we just teach our guys to get on their hips and ride them down. you know, we don't have them switch, you know, to get their stick. Are you saying the defensive midi to get his stick in front of the Dodger as they're going down the alley?
Well, I mean, we would always coach the guys to keep the stick on the high side or the inside and force the guy wide.
Right.
So let's say hypothetically I'm the goalie, right? And my top right, a guy's going to drive with the ball.
Okay.
And the guy covering him is right-handed.
Yep.
Well, I don't want to put the stick on the outside and encourage the guy to roll back, you know, where
right.
he's got a better angle or gets the time and space or time and room or whatever.
Yep.
So I want that stick on the high side or the inside as he's driving, and then when he touches that bottom hand, you know, that's when we're trying to get that little lift, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I coach lift on the bottom hand. I don't coach lift on the elbow, but although neither is right or wrong. So you got a right-handed defenseman, you know.
Yep.
And so I didn't really care. This makes me a really bad person, Ryan.
No.
I tell my defenseman, I don't really care. You know,
right.
I tell them about the controversy and tell them,
yep.
you know, that there's two schools of thought in how you coach.
Right.
Well, my coach says,
right.
you know, you got to go left, you know. A U15 kid can't go left, you know. I mean, playing defense, so.
What we'll do is, I mean, we teach them to just get on the hips, keep your stick upfield. In that situation, it would be in his right hand, and he would just be, you know, we teach get your bottom hand, and punch the hip and drive him and force him down that alley. And that top hand is more of like a guide on where you want him to go. But we're punching with that bottom, you know, we're punching with that bottom hand on his hip to force him and disrupt him down the alley.
Man, it's interesting, Ryan. I think in the last year or two, you know, I'm a 10-year ref, and I've never seen anything in writing or received any emails. But it seems like in the last year or two, they're much more aggressive on calling that strong push-up, or strong when you really hit them with a hand or push them hard with a hand. Seeing that called a push, where I don't think I saw it called a push for 10 years before that.
Yeah, well, I don't.
Have you seen any of that?
Not strong enough yet.
Well,
not at our level. No. Yeah, not at our level.
Or even if the guy starts to back in, and you give him a healthy push out and readjust back into your defensive posture, you know.
Well, as long
man,
as they're
seen
not
that called a push.
Over. Yeah, we don't usually get that called unless they fall over, you know. So if you're doing that and you're punching the hip and they're holding position, we're not gonna get called on that. Now, if you punch the hip and they happen to fall over, then we'll get that.
But like I said, it's just kind of weird, man. I'm seeing that
mm-hmm.
call to where I've, you know, like I said,
yeah.
you could pretty much, as long as you didn't knock them over, you know, you
right,
could
right.
push them pretty hard,
right,
you know, and get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
So we come out of the transition segment. We're doing 6v6. Is there a dedicated
yep.
place where you go 10v10, or you just kind of insert it in whatever feels
we
right that day?
Yeah, we insert it in depending on how well the 6-on-6 segment went, and you know, what our guys are kind of feeling. You know, there'll be some times where we do that right away in the beginning of practice, especially if we have, you know, a grueling practice where these guys are really working hard, and you know, the next day we kind of want to reward them with just, all right, guys, we'll hear the teams, let's get up and down for a little bit. You know, we'll go sometimes. We'll do a full 10-on-10 at the end of a practice, and you know, I get a lot of mixed reviews from it, and people are like, well, why do you wait until they're exhausted and this and that? And I want to see what our guys, I want to see how they play when they're fatigued. You know, there are some times where we'll have the strength coach come out and, you know, whip up on them and get them tired before practice, because, you know, when you're exhausted, that's when you have to be your strongest. And, you know, we coach that a lot with these guys. You know, slow their emotions down, focus on what they're doing, move the ball, you know, gather themselves.
Hey, you know, one of the things, I'm not really doing a good job at the podcast here, just because I feel like I know you. I feel like we're just talking.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah,
I tell you something that's really worked for me in reinforcing that
uh-huh.
is running the, you know, you can run your triangle crunch drill, or I love that where JB runs it, where he puts cones 10 yards in front and he runs like a crunch
yep.
from back to front. Or the toggle drill, or, Steve Colfer gave us a nice one that I would call a clinch drill between the hash marks, too. But anyway, I'll have my guys run that real fast-paced, one of the crunch variations, if you will. And I know crunch is my term, but hopefully just a confined area thing.
Sure.
And then I'll have them run like four sideline to sideline 17-second deals, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then immediately right back into the crunch.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how the ball glances off the stick, the top of the stick, or the passes are not, you know, high and away where he's throwing it at the guy's belly button or to the other side of his head or those kind of things.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Just as a way of proving the point that, you know, in a game, when you feel yourself mentally tired, and let's say we can't get you off the field, man. Let's say it flies up and down a couple of times or they do some quick inbound plays and the fur is flying. You know, that when you are exhausted, you have to really make sure, I'm talking now elementary fundamentals, you know, step when you throw, get your hands up. I mean, you really have to think about being a U13 player again when you make that pass and what you're trying to do fundamentally. But I don't know that that philosophy accomplishes much, but it does really demonstrate to the players in hard life, you know, demonstration, you know, the difference. Between trying to play exhausted and trying to play when you're fresh or semi-fresh.
Right, and you know what? If you make that point early enough in the year, they get it and they understand. You know, coach is right. We can't. You know, when we have to play our best is, you know, late in the fourth quarter, and if we're exhausted and mentally checked out, we can't do it. So there are some times where you have to really, you know, put them in a situation to understand that, so that they know when you're conditioning, when you're doing all this stuff, that they have to be at their strongest, you know. We actually started doing another drill, too, even at the end of practice. Like, after we're done with either 10-on-10 or 6-on-6, we call it the challenge drill. And this one, we break up offense, defense, and it's a conditioning. It's conditioning and one-on-one. So what we'll do is, you know, we'll line the whole team on the end line. And, you know, that's their favorite words are toe the line. You know, you have more groans when they hear that than anything. You know,
what do they hear, Coach?
And when they hear toe the line.
Okay.
You know, I mean, get on the end line. So.
Okay.
What we'll do here is, you know, we'll break the team up offense, defense, and this is all conditioning with a one-on-one, you know, spice. And you know, we'll have them do various sprints, you know, 10, 15, 20 yard sprints, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're all exhausted. And I'll say, you know, all right, Johnny, you got the challenge today. And then Johnny comes out, and then he picks, you know, he gets to pick a kid to go one-on-one, and he picks a defender. So, you know, Johnny picks Billy. And, you know, goalie comes in the cage, and now Johnny gets to pick his spot wherever he wants to dodge from, anywhere on the field. And if the offense wins, the defense runs some extra. If the defense wins, the offense runs extra. So you want to talk about being mentally challenged and put in a spot to help your team succeed. You know, that's the drill that we started doing this year, and it's really – the kids love it, you know.
So how many Johnnies do you have? I mean, do you run that with, like, three or four offensive 1v1s or five or eight or just one?
Just one. And, you know, we've toyed with the idea of potentially moving it to, like, a 2-on-2, but we'll do it quick. You know, you've got 10 seconds to get it done. And if it's not done, if you don't get a shot off in 10 seconds, that's a loss, and now the offense has to run, you know. And then we go, you know, we'll do another sprint or two, and then we'll call, you know, Bobby. You know, Bobby comes up. And
yeah, that's what I was asking. How many 1v1s do you actually run?
Oh, we'll do, you know, we can do anywhere from, you know, 5 to 10, you know, because they're running, and, you know, we're changing up the distance of the sprints, you know, every time that they go. So, and if there's any problems, you know, if there are any problems within the team that, you know, things need to be settled, you know, this is the time to do it. You know, get out here and it's one-on-one, man versus man, and, you know, you handle your business. And then after that, you shake hands and you walk off the field.
Shoot, Ryan. Oh, man. His name escapes me. Who was the coach at Limestone before JB that then coached the Charlotte Hounds? He became the AD at Limestone?
Coach Serino.
Yeah. Yeah, Serino, when he was coaching, he would run 6v6, and if the offense threw it away,
Yep.
A new group would come in and play 6v6, and that offense went and by the midfield line and ran sprint sideline to sideline.
He called it what, 2 minutes of offense with accountability.
And then they would have to come back in and play. I mean, accomplishing the same thing, you know, playing when you're tired. That was brutal, man. Mm-hmm. I did it with my kids one time. I think I got visited by child services the next day.
Well, you know, we're just trying to mentally toughen them up, you know, and that's something that these guys need to do.
Man, I've so enjoyed talking to you. We're coming up on it.
Yeah.
Coach, talk to me about the camps now.
We have 1 day camp that's usually in June. This year it's going to be the 19th through the 23rd. We haven't done any overnight camps, but it's something that we're thinking about doing in the future. But this year coming up, we just have the day camp scheduled. All the info is on floratechsports.com. And if you go under the fan section to camps and clinics, you'll be able to see all the boys lacrosse camps that are there. And it's fun. You know, we go over all the fundamentals of the game and we just build off of the group that we have.
And if I remember right, that was for all age groups, right?
It's for third grade through 12th grade.
And
basically what we do is, you know, whatever group we have out there, we see what the fundamental flaws are and we just build up on, you know. We differentiate the instruction based on the the population that we have out there.
Cool, man. Hey, I know you met with a lot of success and then you kind of got hit by the injury bug in 2016, but I am just so confident that there's some huge victories on the horizon for you. Coach, I can't thank you enough for coming on, and I can't thank you enough for the kind words about the ideas that you've gotten off the website in our other conversations, man. It means the world to me. It lets me know that, you know, we're maybe helping all categories of coaches, you know, from high school and rec all the way up through the college guys. And, you know, nobody, I don't get it much publicly. You know, I get a lot of college coaches emailing saying, I just listened to this podcast, man. I got a question, you know, and I don't want to call them, you know.
Awesome. I appreciate everything that you do. I mean, there are times where I'm sitting at home at night and, you know, I've got lacrosse on the brain, so I'll just put on, you know, a podcast and you know, Coach Tierney is one of my favorites, and I just listen to him. And, you know, Coach Daly, you know, now up in Brown, you know, he's another one of my favorites that I just listen to over and over. And
so I kept having trouble getting Daly back on, man. I need to get him back on.
He's big time now, you know, he's D1.
No, I mean, even when he was at Tufts, I think he was doing so many coaching clinics and stuff, you know, he kind of thought he had the given back. I don't want to say, I don't know.
He's awesome. You know, everybody wants him. Yeah, you know, so I appreciate everything you've done. You know,
what's your favorite podcast?
I can't remember
what you said.
Yeah, there's too many. I mean, I listen to Coach Daly a lot just because I feel like our, you know, with Tufts and with Florida Tech, they're very similar in academic students, and I try to you know, learn a lot from how he ran his practices and you know, the success that he has. So,
well, and that was crazy, man, because he ran his practices around engineering labs.
Right, and that's what I have to do. I mean, we don't practice.
You know,
we practice late, you know, in the afternoons. I mean, last year we and up until this fall, practices were, you know, 6 to 8:30 every night, p.m. You know, and we got to wait until the academics are done. But that's what this program is built on, is the academics. And
well, it's funny because, you know, when we first started the project, as you know, nobody was running 10v10 30 minutes into practice. Nobody.
Right, right.
You know, it was all the old Masera model, if you will, I say with great respect.
Right. Absolutely.
But, necessity dictated that he change up his practice plan by when he had all his players there.
Right.
And it turned out to be a huge benefit in terms of guys adjusting to game situations and not coming out flat and blah, 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 and all those other great things.
Right. Yep, absolutely.
Anyway, you are the greatest thing since sliced bread, Coach Ryan McAlevey. I just am so thankful for you, man. This is Lax Coach Mike. Stay on the line with me, Coach. Lax Coach Mike, laxcoachmike.com. You've got a tremendous responsibility influencing the lives of these young people, man. Until next time, God bless everybody.